Hey, welcome world travelers and fellow adventurers to the Tales of a Traveler podcast. It's me, your host, Stacey Utek. My greatest joy is traveling and exploring the world with people that I love. I have been to 63 countries and have a bunch of stories to share with you. So thanks so much for joining me as I venture down memory lane and share with you the tales of my adventures from around the world. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I should welcome myself back. It's been a while since I have recorded a podcast. But I think there's been some beauty in just giving myself grace to record or not record or put stuff out there or not put stuff out there and just not worry about it. I think when I started this podcast, my heart was to just get my stories spoken and shared. And the story I want to tell today is one that I've actually really been thinking about for months now and wanting to share on the podcast. But if I'm being honest, it's probably the hardest story for me to share because it's too hard to convey with words what this trip meant to me. And in a way, it was very sacred and everything that happened, so meaningful. And then there's an extra reason why it's really hard to tell this story, which I'll share at the end. But it really was one of the most beautiful life-transforming experiences of my life. And when you know that deep in your heart, it feels kind of like a downgrade to say it out loud, if that makes sense. Like it's to speak it out in words, I'm not going to be able to do it justice. And I can't expect that, but I do want to say it out loud. I was reading a story last night about a woman who had a tumor in her brain, and the only way that they could remove it was to go through the part that would impact her speech. And she knew that she was going to lose her speech. And it really impacted me. And I thought how thankful I am to use my voice to share things that I've been through. And I think I've said this before, but I don't actually care who listens to this podcast. If no one does, that's fine. I just think I want it for myself to have it kind of immortalized in a way. So this might kind of be a long podcast. I actually have no idea. I'm just going to say things. I'm not going to edit it. I'm just going to tell my story of my time in Micronesia. And I already know that it's not going to come out perfect and that it's not going to be communicated in a way that I wish I could communicate it, but I'm going to try nonetheless. So that's my 2-minute, 42-second intro. I actually pulled out my journal from my experience in Micronesia and maybe a few months ago actually, and started reading it, and I couldn't keep reading. I was crying. And then after I'd heard that story on a podcast yesterday or the day before, I was like, okay, I'm going to pull out my journal and read it. And so it's taken me 2 days to get through, and I've just cried the entire time reading through it. So many incredibly beautiful moments and so many people who actually mean so much to me and became family in such a short time. So okay, I'm going to stop beating around the bush and just tell you about what I did. So back in 2014, I had a really hard year personally. There were a lot of, there were some job rejections that I took very personally. There was a pretty bad relationship kind of breakup and very confusing and heartbreaking for me, among other things. And I was really at a point where I was questioning. I had been at Malone as a resident director for several years by this point and was really questioning whether or not Malone and Canton were places that I wanted to stay and continue to sew into, or whether I was meant to leave, but feeling all kinds of closed doors and like the Lord was really leading me to stay in Canton. And so I was really wrestling with that. And I was exhausted. And so it had just been a long year. And when I got my summers off as a resident director. And so when I was thinking about what I want to do with my summer, I was thinking back to when I had worked and lived on a sailboat in Chicago. And I just loved sailboat living. I loved it. And I really wanted to try to do that again. And so I don't honestly remember how I got connected. I think I saw an ad on social media for YWAM Ships based out of Kona, Hawaii, and got in contact with the person who was in charge of it. And I just said, "Hey, I'm Stacy. I've lived and worked on a sailboat before, but honestly, I just want to come and serve." And so I wasn't going to sign up to be a part of YWAM. I just wanted to be on the boat and like sweep and mop and do dishes. And I remembered thinking through, what do I really want to do with my time there? And I just remember thinking over and over, I just want to serve with my head down. Like, I don't want to be needed. Like, I'd spent years as a resident director, like constantly being needed and constantly pouring out. And so I thought to myself, I would just love a summer where I just get to go and serve and chill and relax and not feel like I have to be anyone or serve in a particular role that's like a leadership role. I just want to go and, you know, do dishes. I just remembered saying that. And so I talked to the guy on the phone and he's like, "Yeah, come on out." So I bought a ticket, and I remembered having almost instant regret when I bought the ticket, because the boat was going to be in Micronesia and the Marshall Islands, which is not, you know, flying from here to Paris. It's like you're flying to these very remote islands. And the ticket itself, I think, was over $3,500 just for a round trip ticket. It's the most I'd ever paid for a plane ticket ever. And when I bought it, I was like, what am I doing? But I just knew that I was supposed to do this. And so I had 5 plane tickets in hand. It took 5 plane trips to get there. And your last flight was onto an island that's a military installation. And this particular military installation, they like tested missiles. And I actually remember at one point in the summer, that island received a missile from California. And I was like, how? And they said, well, it just took about 20 minutes to get there, this missile. And they clear all of the airspace for that to happen. It gets crazy. Like, we don't even know the half of it, what they do. So there was this military installation island, and they, you know, the army's there, and like there's no vehicles on the entire island. It's about a mile wide by a mile long, and everyone just rides bikes. And so more on that later. I spent some time there, but basically you land there and they took all your luggage and put it in a separate area and screened it. And then we all had to sit in a separate room upon arrival. And then you get carted to this ferry station. Because I wasn't staying on that particular island. I was going to the boat on, you know, opposite another island, about a 20-minute ferry ride away. So I go to get on the ferry, and Kimberly came, and she was a gal from the boat, and she greeted me there. And I think I remember there was like a pizza place on the island, and it was like a luxury to have this pizza. And so she's getting pizza for the crew, and she grabbed me, and we got on the, you know, the ferry, and we went over. And I remember seeing the boat, and the boat was called the Aloha. It was from Hawaii. And the whole point of the boat with YWAM is to receive teams to go, and then the ship was going to go to lots of different islands to provide medical care, equipment. You know, a lot of these islands don't receive a lot of people incoming, you know, like equipment or supplies or things like that. A lot of them don't have landing strips. So it's like a boat is a great way to access these islands. So that's the whole point of this ministry through YWAM, is that they would have the ability to go to these islands and provide ministry and care. And so me just kind of showing up, I'm not connected to YWAM. I was a little shocked to this day that they let me go on the boat. But I just remember like going on the ferry, and then there was like a dinghy that picked us up and drove us to the boat. And I remember seeing it, and I was like, oh, it's like so beautiful. And there's this turquoise, crystal clear turquoise water surrounding it. And I remember one of the first people to greet me was Aaron, and he grabbed my backpack, and they brought me aboard, and I climbed up a ladder up the side of the boat, and everyone was there to greet me. And then I went down into like the lower part of the ship, and that's where my like room was, and I was sharing a room with Alyssa. dear, sweet Alyssa. I just love her to death. And she was there to greet me, and I just started unpacking my stuff, and we were talking. And I think it was around that time or later that day that she said that they had created this list. They were like trying to make guesses about who I was. And hold on, I'm going to grab the list real quick. It's sitting in front of me. And so they were just like playing around and trying to make guesses, like they were making guesses about who I am. And so I'm just going to, I still have it. I'm going to read a few of the things. So it's on the top, it says Stacy in caps. And then it says, loves chili. Favorite book of the Bible is Psalms. Good hair cutter. Likes hot dogs. She's a medium amount of moles. Brown hair with some blonde. Mind you, they've never seen me. They don't, they've not seen a picture of me. They have no clue who I am. Green eyes. Strong and a little stocky. let's see what else there is here. Favorite color is purple. She doesn't like fish a whole lot, but she'll be impressed with the tuna. Plays the flute and the harmonica. Has a lot of secret skills that will be useful on the boat. Her and Zach will get along, especially like brother and sister, which ended up being true. Not really a coffee drinker. True. Loves ice cream and popsicles. Easy to get along with. I'm just kind of picking a few. There's a ton. A talker. Favorite flower is yellow daisy. Doesn't like getting in the water too much and is kind of grossed out by it. Not true. Love water. Let's see. She'll give Zach a hard time for not waking up early. Likes Coca-Cola. Just, you know, all these random things. But the one that ended up being the truest is she'll like us a lot and we'll like her. And there couldn't be a truer statement, because the truth is that I got on board and I fell in love with the crew in a very short time. So there was Kimberly and Zach and Aaron and Alyssa. And later on, we received a team, and Captain Ann came later. And I mean, I can't even describe to you how dear these people ended up becoming, because a lot of it is you spend your day in a lot of simplicity. Like, boat life is a simple life. One of my favorite things about boat life, and especially that summer, is I can't count how many I maybe can count on one hand how many times I wore shoes. We would just run around the ship barefoot. The only time I'd wear shoes is if I was going to land. And sometimes I'd be halfway down the ladder going to the dinghy and realize I didn't have shoes on. Jumping in the ocean to bathe. You know, I don't even think I took one shower on the boat. It's just, which sounds disgusting, but we would just, you know, soap up and then jump in the ocean. But it just, man, how can I describe it? It's just so sweet. Like, a lot of our time was spent catching fish and frying them up and playing card games and playing our ukuleles and talk. Like, a lot of it was just spent talking, getting to know each other. I mean, there was a TV on board and we could watch movies, but we just really didn't watch that much TV. We just enjoyed the simple life. And I'll never forget one of my first days on board. Aaron was going to go spearfishing, you know, like on Survivor, legit spearfishing. And I wanted to try too. So I put on my flippers and I got a spear and we both jumped in the water. And it is like National Geographic. Like, when I tell you that when I went underwater, it's crystal clear. Like, it's the most gorgeous turquoise water. But when you're underwater, I remembered seeing him with his spear and he was like diving down deep and shooting his spear to try to catch a fish. And it was beautiful. Like, I can see it in my mind now. It just felt like I was watching him on a TV show in National Geographic. Like, I can't describe it any other way. Like, there was just that image of him like swimming beautifully and effortlessly through the water. And we just spent a lot of time in the water. And so just loved that. Loved the simple life. Like, one of the sweetest things is I'd never owned a ukulele before. And I knew that Captain Ann was coming from Hawaii. And I, you know, sent her a message and just said, would you be able to bring me a ukulele? I'll pay you for it. And she ended up bringing, I think, like 6 to 8 ukuleles on board when she ended up getting there. And mine had a special ribbon on it. And it was chosen specifically because it was one of the best that they had directly made in Hawaii, and like her friend had tested out a bunch of them and had chosen the best ones for us and for me in particular. And I remember opening it and just being in so much awe and like being absolutely in love with this ukulele. And there's kind of a side story where like the Lord used this ukulele to really confirm that I needed to stay at Malone longer as a resident director. So it's like another story for another day. If you ever want to know it, I'll tell it to you. But it's kind of like a really personal, sweet story, so I probably won't share it here. But I just remember us sitting around at night playing the ukulele, talking, laughing, just having the best time. And when the team came from YWAM, they were the ones to kind of do a lot of the ministry on the island that was next to us. And we were connected with this most amazing pastor and his wife. And there were nights where we'd get to, you know, go on land and like spend time at their church. Or there was like this women's night one time, I remember, where they like all showed up and they all wore this, they all had this custom red dress that they had to wear, and or they wore to very special occasions. And we were invited to this women's thing where all these women were gathering and singing and studying scripture together. And then they had this meal, and they served us all this meal, and then they brought us seconds, and then they had huge cake and tons of ice cream after that. And we were just so filled. But I mean, what I love, I mean, the island people, and I remembered coming home from this experience and being so outraged that people in America don't know much about islanders and like that life and the people. I mean, these people who live on these islands, you'll never hear about, never maybe meet. They're just the most incredible, playful, joyful people in the whole world. And these women are like, in that culture, bigger is beautiful. Like the more hefty you are, the more gorgeous you are. And just like being released from this beauty standard that you feel in the Western world, and like the ability to eat and enjoy, and like just the joy of these women. Like they were just these gorgeous, gorgeous women. And loving that, and loving meeting this pastor, and just getting to spend time in their home. Again, like I was reading my journal about a night where we went over and we just played our ukuleles and played charades and talked and just had the best time. And of just the unreal hospitality of the people on these islands. And not to mention, like, there were a lot of Americans at this military installation island that's a 20-minute ferry ride away. And as I was reading my journal, I forgot, but like the amount of people that were so interested in what we were doing and so interested in our ship. And like, we would host meals on board, and like people would come with their families and their kids. Like they would invite us over to the island and we'd all go over, and they'd just create these beautiful meals for us. They would invite us to like come and take showers in their house and spend a night there, like if we wanted to. And it's just, yeah, it was just incredible. Like the amount of relationships and people that we forged. And I would just write about in my journal about nights where we would just eat and laugh and enjoy each other. And I think I was just astounded that, you know, I went there for probably, I think it ended up being close to 5 weeks, but it was instantaneous, this connection that I felt with the people that I met there and the people on board. Just, yeah, unbelievable. Other things about boat life that I loved. Oh, you know, there's a little ice, like a place you get ice cream on land. And so we'd go there frequently for a little scoop. I quickly learned how to drive the dinghy, and it was like my proudest accomplishment of the summer. And no one else really cared to learn or wanted to learn. I mean, I think Aaron drove it often. I think Alyssa might have too, but it was like my favorite thing. And so I was, you know, the little transporter, and I felt so proud of myself that I knew how to drive from the boat to the land. But there was a night when we were on land, and the two waves were going back to the ship, the dinghy. We couldn't fit everybody in there, and it was taking forever for them to get back. And when we saw them around the corner with their little headlamps, they were rowing because the engine had gone out, and these sweet boys rowed. I was the queen. I was an absolute queen. I was sitting in the back, and they were rowing the dinghy all the way back to the boat. And I don't remember this, but I wrote this, that I stood up with my ukulele in the boat, and I started making up a song about the guys rowing us back to the ship and being saved. And, you know, like these guys were just the best. There were probably like four or five guys who took turns rowing this dinghy back to the ship. I remember another time that I was driving the dinghy alone and dropping somebody off, and the motor wouldn't turn back on. And I was terrified that I was going to have to row it all the way back by myself. But praise the Lord, it finally kicked on the engine. So that was good. Not to mention the boat had a lot of engine issues as well. And we had a generator, but it often would cut out. And there was one time where it was pretty serious. Like, I don't remember exactly the circumstances around it, but we found out that it wasn't working. And based on that, like, we can't cook food. You know, there's a lot of things that are affected by it, you know, obviously no electricity. And so again, like, people from all over would just come in, like these great minds, these engineering minds, and they worked on our engine. They would work on our batteries. They would work on our generator. And that particular night, I'll try to post a video if I can grab it. Gabby called it the simple life. She's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna have the simple life tonight. And so we did. Alyssa figured out how to make pizzas on the grill. The guys started fishing. Like, we were just doing our best. We were like filling up, you know, pails of water to use if we needed for the toilet. Like, and then these men were there just working all night. And so we all sat on the top deck in the pitch black, and we ate pizzas together, and we just laughed and we talked. And that's just kind of what like boat life is about. And I miss it. Like, I miss that simple living and the ability to troubleshoot and laugh about things when they're not going well and work together to survive together. And so you might be wondering why I'm talking so much about why we had so many days like this on the boat. Well, we were supposed to do some trips to some islands, and it kept getting delayed. And part of it was the captain wasn't on board. I think there were some other reasons why we couldn't leave yet. And so when I got there, I thought that we were going to basically be traveling the whole time, but we ended up staying put for, I think, almost the first 3 weeks that I was there, which I felt kind of disappointed by when I first, was there, because I was like, I kind of came here to have this crazy experience and like go around to all these different islands and serve these different communities. But instead, I mean, it kind of was exactly what I wanted and what I asked for. Like, I wanted this experience of just going and getting to serve. So I did. Like, I was just there. I remember just loving doing dishes and staring out the porthole. And once a week, a huge cargo ship would roll up to the island, and it would create big waves, and our ship would definitely feel it. And I remember sweeping a lot and getting up early. I remember breakfast would always be oatmeal, and I'd put craisins and honey in it, and I'd go up to the top deck, and I would sit in the bow of the ship, and I would just like let the sun beat on my skin and like the wind just go through my hair, and I would just pray and read my Bible. And every morning, I mean, it had to have been like 6:30, the generator would kick on, and I would know that because I would hear it, and the fan would come out. Like, there was a fan in our room, but it only worked when the generator was on. And we only turned the generator on to make coffee in the morning. And that would be like, I would sleep for an extra hour usually, because it felt so good to have a fan on. It was hot, y'all. It was very hot. But my favorite way to wake up was Aaron would come down into the galley to get food. And he would say, "Wake up, Stacy Cornbear." That was his nickname for me. There was some wrestling. There was some wrestling show. I'm not going to get this right. And there was somebody, I think, named Stacy Corn, I don't remember. There's a reason why he called me that. I have to find out why. There was some wrestling show that reminded him, like, and there was some character on there that was like Stacy Corn something, but he called me Stacy Corn Bear, and then it just turned into Stacy Bear, I think, at some point. And so that was like my favorite way to wake up, was Aaron coming down and being like, "Wake up, Stacy Corn Bear." And like, I would hear him, and then I'd go get my oatmeal and go sit on the front of the bow and just like spend time alone, looking at the water. And yeah, I remember one day too, where I just went down and got the flippers and the goggles, and I went and scrubbed the hull of the ship. And I would just spend a couple hours down there, like scrubbing the barnacles off the hull of the ship and just praying and thinking. And I just had so much time that summer to process a hard year and so many safe people to do it with. And as I read through my journal, there were just so many revelations about my life at that time and just the hard experiences that I was going through. I felt completely released from that relationship that summer. Like, I felt like my heart was healed in an instant. And I don't think that happens often, but I just remember sitting up top on the ship and there was like a storm rolling in and I was looking at the sky and I was praying and I left that experience and felt completely healed from a broken relationship. And it just was like thing after thing after thing that summer, like just the amount of, yeah, healing and beauty and relationship. Yeah, like I said, it's just so hard to describe. Another favorite memory is Alyssa had to leave the ship earlier than I did. And it was just so devastating for many reasons. I got super close with her. She felt like a little sister to me. She was my roommate. We had just beautiful deep talks every night before we went to bed, we would just stay awake talking. We would lay in the dinghy and out, you know, like in the water and just watch the ship masts like sway back and forth and just talk about our lives and things that were difficult and things that were beautiful. And so it was really hard to see her go. But one other thing about Alyssa is she was the cook on the ship. And when she left, I don't know why, but it fell on me. Cause I think by this point, Kimberly had left as well. And, I think no one else rose up and felt like they could do it. So it just was me. And I remember the day she left, I was like nervous. So I think I emailed home and asked mom for her chicken pot pie recipe. Cause I was like, I remember ruffling through cans and cans of food that we had in the kitchen. And I was like, okay, there's like canned vegetables. I think I have enough to make a chicken pot pie. And so sure enough, we did and everyone loved it. And then I just took the pressure off myself when it came to cooking. And I like created teams of the crew members and the team that was on board. And I said, okay, we're going to have different nights of the week where you're responsible to make the meal. But in conjunction with the meal, there has to be a presentation. And then there's going to be a winner at the end of the week who had the best presentation and the best meal. Kind of, you know, raise the stakes a little bit. And so everyone showed up for it and they would create their little like lists of ingredients that they needed. I would go to the grocery and like pick them up and then they would create these amazing presentations. And the guys one night were, I don't know what they were making, but I was reading in my journal that Aaron was like smelling the spice. He's like, I don't know what this is, but I feel good about it. And then he's like letting all the other guys sniff the spice. And they're like, I feel good about your good feeling. And they're like moving forward with this. All of them are down there baking, you know, making food with their shirts off because everyone's sweating. It's disgustingly hot in the boat all the time. And then they come up and they wear these like tribal outfits and they put flour all over their faces and they like present, they made chicken feet. And then they did this whole presentation and it just brought so much joy to my heart. Like there's just such a beauty and an energy and such a creativity that was flowing. And we just had the best time all the time. Gosh, let me see. I got to look at my, I had to make notes, guys. Okay. Boat losing power, ukuleles, running around with no shoes on, showering in the ocean. Oh, the first time in the boat, I have to backtrack. So if you've never lived on a boat before, it rocks. Like it is like you are a baby in a crib. And I remembered the first night it being real hard, like really hard. And I remembered people saying it'll take you about 3 days to acclimate to the movement of the boat. And that was true. But the first night, it's when I was in my room, first of all, super hot because the fans aren't on and it's just, you're baking. Second of all, the movement of the ship where my bed was located, it would rock, but like my head would go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. So it's like all the blood would drain into my head and then it would, you know, drain out. And so it was a struggle to learn how to sleep on the ship. I remembered one night it being so hot that I just took my pillow and a sheet up to the top deck and I slept directly on the top deck. And I woke up to the ocean and the sun and all this stuff, but I didn't sleep well that night. Later on when we were kind of underway in the trip, I remembered sleeping in the helm because or maybe we weren't underway. That was when we were parked, but or anchored, but there was like a little bit of a cross flow of air through the helm. So I remember me and Aaron sleeping up like on mats on the floor in the helm. And I remembered thinking, someday I'm going to be in my warm, soft bed and I'm going to miss these nights of sleeping on a tiny mat not very well in a hot night in the helm of this ship. And it's true. And I think about that all the time. Like, just what an incredible experience it was. Even sleepless nights and hot nights and the rocking of the ship. But it is true that, like, the rocking was intense. And I mean, I'll kind of maybe get into this when we got underway, but everything's more difficult when the boat is rocking as hard as it is. But after about 3 days, I did. I got used to it. And I remembered coming home and it being weird to be sleeping in a still bed. Okay, let's see if there's anything else. I mean, there's a million things I feel like I could say. I mean, yeah, just like the Pastor Kevin, even on the military installation island, like I connected with him and his wife and they just like ministered to me. They gave me great advice. They listened to me and my pain. Like it was just, yeah, it's just like everyone and everything touched my heart. It just really touched my heart. I'm going to read this little quote from my my journal as I keep reminiscing. But this is close to when I was leaving. Gosh, guys, did I ever cry when I was reading this journal the past 2 days? Okay, so let's see. I was talking about how Kimberly's leaving, Alyssa leaves, and we pick up anchor. And, we're going to leave soon. Well, I'm excited to get out on the ocean a week from today. We'll be well on our way to Majuro. I found myself feeling sad of the closure of this chapter of my life. A couple weeks ago, I was super struggling with the fact that we would be staying put for these 2 weeks, feeling super discouraged at the length of time we would be here. And now I find myself wanting to slow time down. I don't want this to change or end, honestly. I know I have a life back home and I talk about it all the time, but there's something inside of me that thinks we'll go on like this forever. This has turned into my home and our daily activities. My life, I'm not really ready for the mundaneness of this daily life to end. Cooking meals together, doing dishes, cleaning ship, dinghy runs, watching the guys turmoil over our battery problems and working so sweaty hard to fix them. Running around barefoot all day and catching glimpses of myself with big, frizzy, out of control hair. Worship and prayer together, deep and superficial questions, seeing the turquoise water, jumping in it and tasting the salt. Midnight bucket refills for the bathroom, congratulating the guys for the fish they catch, tickle fights, losing battles, depth of our conversation and love for the Lord. I'll miss it all. Yeah, I really do. I really do. Gosh, I could almost like thumb through this journal and stop at any point and just read you guys stuff. But man, I wish I could just read you this whole journal. I really do. Yeah, so we were kind of anchored in that one spot for 3 weeks, maybe. And then Captain Ann joined us, and we ended up heading out into the ocean underway after that. And it took us about 5 days to get to Majuro. And that was a really fun, sweet time as well. Very different. Gosh, I have these videos of me down in my bedroom and we're rocking so hard in the ocean that like my porthole is completely submerged in water and then it's like tilted up and you can see the sky and then it's submerged underwater, tilted up to the sky. And I read about how the first days out into the ocean. I mean, guys, it is the deepest blue that you can imagine. And I also wrote about this gorgeous rainbow coming out and staying with us for almost an hour. But I got to steer the boat. I don't even know if that's the correct terminology anymore. I got to steer the boat one of the first shifts, and I thought I was doing okay. And then Captain Ann came up and told me I was basically zigzagging like pretty hard. But it was so difficult, you guys. Like I had steered the ship that I worked on in Chicago at Navy Pier for a while. And that was even a challenge. But we're not talking about a lake. We're talking about an ocean that has giant waves. And it's just like a lot of movement. And learning how to steer this huge boat was just, I mean, guys, how big was it? I think it was 80 feet. So it was a big ship, but I just remember her being like, yeah, you're pretty much zigzagging us. And I was like, oh, sorry about that. But along with being underway 24 hours a day, we had to be on watch. And so at night you would sign up, or we had a shift that we would do. And often, I think my shift ended at 9 p.m., but then the next group would come on. And then that was the shift at night where they would just play worship music and worship. And I would stay on for their shift too. So I would do my shift and then stay on from like 9 to midnight. And I'll never forget just like the silhouettes of people standing by the door and just like worshiping the Lord and the sound of the waves and the peace of the ocean, not seeing anything all around you. Like the stars in the sky are unbelievable. And yeah, like we'd all bring our mats up and kind of sleep in the galley area, not the galley area, the like the salon area together. And I remembered cooking one day. It was very tumultuous. Like I was down in the galley by myself, and I remembered I was cooking rice and beans, and I had to hold both pots on the oven because if I let go for a second, they would slide off the oven. And yeah, there was just like so many special memories from that time. Like you could just go out on the bow of the ship and it would basically, there are times where it would just dip in the water. And I remember just like going out there and worshiping and, you know, like really loud or like scream singing, or, you know, we would just laugh and run around the ship. And I wrote about a time where me and Zach were in the helm and we were listening to Jump Around, Jump Around. And we were jumping. And because of the movement of the ship, there were times where you either felt super grounded or you were flying in the air. And we were just laughing and like jumping and singing along to this music. And yeah, that was just really, really crazy, crazy time. But the other thing I was super proud of is that I didn't get sick. I didn't get seasick. Most of the team was seasick. And I think it was me, Captain Ann, Aaron, and Zach, I think we're the only ones who didn't get seasickness. So we took over a lot of the watches and different things and cooking and kind of doing the things on the ship that needed done. But after 5 days of that, we landed in Majuro and spent a couple days there. And that's when I had to leave. And I had to catch a flight. Actually, it's a long story why, but I had to buy another flight in between these islands so that I could catch my flight home because our ship was running late. And so we weren't going to make it in time. But I'm going to share that whole story of my time on Tarawa Island, which was just 24 hours. But it's just, there's so much more to say. I'm going to do that in another episode, I decided. But I remember just saying goodbye was probably, it was very difficult. But in my heart, I knew, I was like, I'm going to come back to this ship. I'm going to come back next summer, because I had already decided like these are the people I want to see again. I want to, you know, like come and serve again. It was just, like I said, I can't say it in my words, but it was the best, one of the best experiences of my life. And so saying goodbye to everyone, like their plan was to continue to do ministry on some of the islands, and then they were going to take the ship back to Hawaii. And then the next year they were going to return, and they had been given permission to come back for the next 10 years. And in my mind, in my heart, I knew like I was going to come back because I wanted to see Alyssa and Aaron for sure. I think we're coming back, and then Zach, and I wasn't sure about, but so many people that I just like absolutely fell in love with. Yeah, we're going to come back. I'm just kind of thumbing through some of my favorite memories. I don't know that it's going to matter to any of y'all, because unless my sweet little shipmates are listening now, I'm just kind of reading through some of these. There is, yeah, a lot of great memories. I'm not going to bore people with my memories, but you know, if you want to hear them, let me know. Maybe another episode. So yeah, I guess this is the part where I say that was the only summer I ever went, because on January 3rd, so after I was on the ship in July, June and July, that January, the crew that I loved so much were on the ship, and there was a big storm in Hawaii, and so they took it out a little bit further from the coast, and a rogue wave hit them from the side, and the ship capsized and rolled twice. And Aaron was lost at sea. and they launched a search for him and they never found him. And yeah, I'm so emotional about it. I think because I also just read all my memories with him and the crew. And obviously I wasn't on board to experience that. I know how, you know, I got to talk to Alyssa about it and how traumatic it was for everyone and terrifying. And thankfully the crew, like Zach and Captain Ann and Alyssa, and there was another, I think, girl on board too, made it out and were saved. But yeah, it was shocking, and there was a deep grief with, I remembered I was actually sitting in a cafe in San Diego, and I saw, I think I saw a picture of the ship, and it was torn up, and I couldn't believe it. And that's when I heard about what happened and the fact that they couldn't find Aaron. And I was actually, being in San Diego, I was right at the Pacific, and I remembered going to the ocean side and writing his name on a rock and throwing it into the ocean and just praying that he'd be found. And he never was. But yeah, there was deep grief that day to lose Aaron and also to lose the ship. And also to lose the dream of returning and having more experiences with those people and with the Islanders. And yeah, so I think this is nothing, this podcast, but I do want to dedicate this to Aaron because he was just the most incredible human being. I think at the time I met him, he was in his mid-20s, but he, like, became more than a brother to me. I just remembered having the deepest conversations with him, and he asked the most incredible questions. He had lived a life of addiction, and just, like, he was doing his own thing before he found the Lord, and before the Lord, he had a radical encounter with the Lord, and then he turned his whole life over, but it didn't mean that, like, that stopped his feelings of addiction or temptation. And so he and I would talk a lot about that. And like, he'd ask a lot of questions just about everything, about forgiveness, about things in scripture, about the character of God, about how to live with people who are hard to live with, how to, you know, I just remembered getting into it with him constantly and in a good way, just like laying up in the helm and telling goofy stories. And then all of a sudden we're talking about really deep, beautiful mysteries of God. And I'll never forget seeing him lean out the doorway on one of our night watches, just with his hand stretched out, praising the Lord, and knowing that he gave his life over to something that was deep and meaningful and real. And Aaron also, like, was the goofiest guy. He was crazy. Like, he was the guy. He would, like, stuff ice down the back of our shirts. We were, like, down in the galley once, and he was fixing something, and he had this oily clamp, and we had our legs kind of dangling underneath, like, the floor was opened up, and he was down below. And he would, like, grab our ankles with the oily clamp, and we would just scream. And he found out, like, that the like a little part above my knee, if you squeeze it, it's really ticklish. And he would like tickle that part, like my knee, until I would be on the floor, just like laughing, crying, screaming. He loved playing the ukulele super fast. Like, I was trying to learn how to play the ukulele, and I often found playing in unison with someone would make me better. And I remember trying to keep up with him, and he just like really loved playing it really fast. He also, when he'd catch a fish, this sounds disgusting, you guys, but like, he would bite its head off because he said that's what the Islanders did, and he wanted to become more like an island guy, which is true. That's what they do. But we were just so disgusted by it. But he would catch fish and he would cook them up, and I didn't like fish, but I remember one night he's like, "Will you try some of my fish?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Stacey, if you love me, you'll try my fish." And then I was like, "Okay, I'll try your fish because I do love you." And then I'd try it, and he just was so beaming. I even read today in my journal about one moment where
I was down doing something in the galley and he was just being super obnoxious. And I'm painting him out to be this really obnoxious guy and he's really not. He's just the most filled with life, funny guy you'll ever meet. I wrote though that he was being super obnoxious and I was like, I turned to him and I said, Aaron, do you need my full attention right now? And he said, yes. And so I took his hand and I paid attention to him and he just, I think he felt so much better. But he just had the most life. He had a deep love for the Lord and for people. He was goofy and wild and like, I think he probably would prefer to be barefoot and shirtless. Like he just would run around the ship and just be this wild island guy. Like I think he felt super drawn. And he actually told me at one point, like, he was very afraid of the water and that, like, being and living on the ship had helped him overcome that fear. And to remember him spearfishing that first day that I met him or, like, the second day I was on board, there was no fear in him, you know, of the water and what was, like, underneath the water's surface. He just was free. And that was indicative of, like, everything else for him. Like, he was loosed. He was free. He was vibrant and he lived his life with a ton of vigor. And I remembered when I thought about going back to the ship the next summer, I just could see him in my mind being the first one to come pick me up on the dinghy. And I would just like jump into the dinghy and give him a huge hug and know that I was going to like spend another summer getting to hang out with him and everybody else. And so like the loss of that was that really hard, like really, really hard. And I still think about him and I know that he's with the Lord. And so that is amazing. And like, yeah, I'm so happy for him and I'm sad for us that we lost such a bright light. So anyways, that's kind of a big reason why recording this episode has felt like hard for me and not something I've really wanted to do, but in a way I've wanted to do it too, because I wanted to share that experience because it was so beautiful. And I didn't even really get to hit on all of the meaningful things that happened to me personally. But when I went back to Malone that year, I felt confirmed that I was supposed to be there. I felt peaceful and I felt like the most vibrant version of myself. And that's when my life really turned around in Canton. Like I felt like I was truly planted here. And and so excited to return as a resident director that year and work with the people I was working with and serve the students I was serving. And from that point on, it was a turning point. And I really felt like that summer on the ship was a big reason why I needed to be there. But do I think every day about getting back on a sailboat and living on it? Absolutely. there's no better life. It's such a beautiful, simple life. I've said the word beautiful a million times, but I don't care. That is what it is. So anyway, I'm going to wrap up here. And then the next episode, I'm going to talk about Tarawa because that was a wild experience, but I want to do it on a separate episode. So thanks for coming back around, y'all. Thanks for listening. If you've made it this far, congrats. You are a hero of Tales of a Traveler. Okay, ta-ta for now.